ATA releases an airline traveler's guide to enjoying summer. Another airline disappears beneath suffocating fuel prices. And a merger between United and U.S. Airways could be bad news for Tempe. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, May 15th, 2008. The Air Transport Association of America, the industry trade organization for the leading U.S. airlines, joined by Airports Council International North America, has released its summer forecast and recommendations for a more enjoyable travel experience. ATA forecasts that passenger volume between June 1st and August 31st this year will be about 211.5 million people. That's down about 1% from last year. ATA President and CEO James May says planes will be about 85% full on average. Quote, "While New York remains a choke point, airlines, airports, and government are doing all they can to avoid lengthy delays when possible and to provide a pleasant travel experience for all," unquote. Greg Principato, president of ACINA, adds that airports are well organized to handle unexpected schedule changes or delays. Quote, "We will work closely with the airlines and the Transportation Security Administration to ensure safe and smooth operations for travelers. In the case of delays, airports will help to provide a full range of business and leisure services to meet passenger needs," unquote. That is, if you can get off the plane to get to them. While neither trade group addressed strandings, ATA does recommend you keep prescriptions, snacks, and diapers in your carry-on. The association also urges printing out boarding passes ahead of time, knowing and following TSA guidelines for liquids and carry-ons, and bringing the proper identification with you. Difficult economic times have claimed another airline. Mesa Air Group subsidiary Air Midwest will be grounded by the end of next month by soaring fuel prices. Air Midwest has been serving 16 cities in 10 states with a fleet of 19-seat Beech 1900 turboprops. The Associated Press reports some cuts in service will begin next week, and the last Air Midwest flight will be on June 30th. Mesa Air Group CEO Jonathan Ornstein observed, quote, "Unfortunately, under the current economic conditions, there was no foreseeable way to achieve sustained profitability. We are working diligently to minimize the impact this decision will have on Air Midwest's passengers and employees," unquote. Mesa purchased Air Midwest in 1991 and used it primarily on subsidized air feeder service to small cities. Earlier this year, Mesa asked the Department of Transportation to release Air Midwest from its 13 essential air service contracts, as the airline ran at a loss even with government subsidies. Airline consultant Michael Boyd notes few will likely notice the loss of Air Midwest, since its 19-seat planes often ran empty or close to it. Mesa hopes to sell or lease those 20 planes. Three people aboard a Bell 206 Jet Ranger and a fourth on the ground died Tuesday when the helicopter came down in a residential neighborhood in Cranbrook, British Columbia. The Associated Press reports the helicopter burst into flames as it skidded across a street in the community 500 miles east of Vancouver, B.C. The helicopter had been hired by a local power company for a line patrol and was transporting two employees to a work site. The death on the ground was reportedly a pedestrian. One witness observed, quote, "I don't think he even knew what hit him," unquote. Investigators are on the scene. There's no word yet on the cause. Aviation industry analysts have been scratching their heads trying to figure out how U.S. Airways and United would efficiently merge two companies which appear to be incompatible jigsaw puzzle pieces. Now, the Phoenix Business Journal reports the answer is by making big changes. The paper cites a Chicago Tribune story which quotes, say it with me now, unnamed sources close to the talks, as saying the combined carrier would be headquartered in United's home city of Chicago, eliminating U.S. Airways headquarters in Tempe, Arizona. U.S. Airways CEO Doug Parker would move to Chicago and head the new airline, but as many as 10,000 U.S. Airways employees in the Tempe-Phoenix area could lose their jobs, and the combined airline's hub structure would be in for realignment. U.S. Airways spokesman Morgan Durant declined to comment on what he called speculation and rumor. Up next on ANN, New York City faces a lawsuit over its award of a heliport franchise. Northrop Eads won't let Boeing delay its groundbreaking in Alabama. And NASA prepares for another difficult landing on Mars. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC 700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 15th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. The decision by officials in New York City to award a Wall Street heliport to an upstate company has drawn the ire of other helicopter operators in the city and a lawsuit as well. The New York Times reports Elmira-based First Flight has never operated a heliport in a major metropolitan area, but was selected by the city's Economic Development Corporation to operate the downtown Manhattan Wall Street heliport over a rival bid by established operator Atlantic Aviation. Operating rights for the heliport came available after the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey opted to discontinue operations at the East River location, adjacent to the Financial District. Several companies bid for the lucrative concession until officials narrowed the field down to Atlantic and First Flight. Another bidder, Linden Airport Management Corporation, has filed suit. Linden runs a New Jersey field that caters to helicopter operations. The company says one of First Flight's directors is Alvin Trank, whose family controls another company, Air Pegasus, which runs New York's West 30th Street heliport. Tour operators say they don't want Air Pegasus to have control over two out of three major heliports in the New York area. A spokeswoman for the Economic Development Corporation said it followed standard procedures in awarding the bid to First Flight, but she declined to explain what factor gave First Flight the contract over Atlantic Aviation. Boeing's challenge to the contract award isn't even through the Government Accountability Office yet, but Northrop Grumman and EADS North America are going ahead with plans to join state, local, and federal officials in Mobile, Alabama, for a groundbreaking ceremony at Brookley Field for facilities in which it will produce the Air Force's new KC-45A tanker. The ceremony is scheduled for Saturday, June 28th, 9 days after the GAO is expected to rule on whether the U.S. Air Force's original decision to award the KCX bid to Northrop EADS will stand. Ronald Sugar, who is Northrop Grumman chairman and CEO, explained the haste, quote, "We're committed to transforming Mobile into the centerpiece of an expanding aerospace corridor. This event underscores the fact that we are ready to get to work now," unquote. The groundbreaking ceremony occurs just a few days after the 60th anniversary of the start of the Berlin airlift. That's significant because Brookley Field was the base from which C-54 transport aircraft supported that airlift. NASA's Phoenix Mars lander is preparing to end its long journey and begin a three-month mission to taste and sniff fistfuls of Martian soil and buried ice. The lander is scheduled to touch down on the red planet May 25th. Phoenix will enter the top of the Martian atmosphere at almost 13,000 miles an hour. In 7 minutes, the spacecraft must complete a challenging sequence of events to slow to about 5 miles per hour before its three legs reach the ground. Confirmation of the landing could come as early as 7:53 p.m. Eastern Time on the 25th. Ed Weiler, who is the Associate Administrator for NASA's Science Mission Directorate at headquarters in Washington, said landing a spacecraft on Mars is daunting. Quote, "Internationally, fewer than half the attempts have succeeded," unquote. Planners are counting on high-resolution pictures from NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter to allow the lander to avoid rocks big enough to ruin its landing or interfere with its solar panels. Mission goals include assessing whether conditions at the site have ever been favorable for microbial life. NASA and its international partners have assigned two crew members to the Expedition 20 International Space Station mission. NASA astronaut Timothy J. Creamer, a colonel in the U.S. Army, and Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency astronaut Soichi Noguchi will launch on a Soyuz spacecraft in November of 2009. Creamer will be making his first trip into space. Creamer and Noguchi will join the Expedition 20 mission in progress and remain aboard the station for 6 months as flight engineers. Kramer will also serve as a NASA science officer. Other members of the Expedition 20 crew have yet to be named. Expedition 20 will continue the assembly of the station, as well as outfit the orbiting complex with spare parts and supplies. Kramer was born in Fort Huachuca, Arizona, but considers Upper Marlboro, Maryland to be his hometown. He has a bachelor's in chemistry from Loyola College and a master's in physics from MIT. He was selected as a NASA astronaut in 1998. Noguchi flew as a mission specialist aboard Discovery in 2005 and performed 3 spacewalks. Still ahead, the first U.S. relief pilot to get through describes the scene in Myanmar. Cynthia Ryan gets a promotion at the Civil Air Patrol. And Boeing's 737 is setting records which may never be broken. You're listening to Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, May 15, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. The government of Myanmar apparently did nothing to warn or prepare its impoverished citizens for the May 2nd landfall of Cyclone Nargis. Even when it became clear the death toll could reach 6 figures, the military junta reportedly stalled the arrival of foreign aid waiting offshore, while its leaders tried to figure out how they could enjoy exclusive credit for the charity. It took 9 days, but the first relief flights got through last weekend. The Air Force pilot who flew the first U.S. relief flight says he and his crew were received warmly, but much more help is needed. Captain Trevor Hall told reporters the aid recipients were ecstatic, but, quote, "with very little broken English that we could make out, they were trying to say, 'Please bring more, please bring more,'" unquote. Hall was the pilot in command of the C-130E Hercules transport that flew the first U.S. emergency relief supplies into Rangoon International Airport. That plane held about 30,000 pounds of bottled water, mosquito nets, and blankets, and it was offloaded by hand in about 2 hours by the Myanmar military and moved on military trucks to a different staging area on the airport. Hall says C-130s sent from Greece and Malaysia and other aircraft from India were also on the airport when the U.S. flight landed. Additional relief flights from the U.S. this week have included medical supplies, plastic sheeting, hygiene kits, some food, and first aid material. Hall says the Rangoon International Airport could easily accommodate one of the larger C-17 Globemaster III or KC-10 extender transport jets every hour, but might have difficulties offloading them. Quote, "they didn't have, for instance, forklifts or any type of equipment that was really needed to offload our plane," unquote. Hall said that during the flight in, the devastation was apparent, but there was little relief activity visible on the nation's roads. Quote, "based on what I saw, I really don't think they have the infrastructure. It would take a lot of people and resources to distribute it the way it needs to be distributed," unquote. Aero News has learned Lieutenant Colonel Cynthia Ryan, the face of the Civil Air Patrol during the search for Steve Fawcett, has been appointed public affairs team leader for the organization. She'll serve as a special liaison for public affairs between the volunteer leadership and the staff at Civil Air Patrol National Headquarters. She was appointed by CAP's interim national commander, Brigadier General Amy Corter. In her new national position, Ryan's stated goal is to redefine and refine the role of mission information officer within CAP. The search for Fawcett last fall sparked massive media interest, and Ryan responded to most of those inquiries. She received the CAP Meritorious Service Ribbon for her role. Delivering 400 of any airplane is a significant milestone for any manufacturer. Well, this week, Boeing celebrated the delivery of 400 737s to one customer. On Monday, Boeing and International Lease Finance Corp. celebrated the milestone marked by the delivery of a 737-800 that ILFC will lease to a customer. ILFC leases and remarkets commercial jet aircraft to airlines around the world. The company received its first 737-200 in June of 1978. With this week's delivery, ILFC has received a total of 660 jetliners from Boeing, including all types. Currently, ILFC's portfolio includes more than 900 jet airplanes, valued at more than $50 billion. The 737, which has been around since the 60s, is setting records which may never be beat. Boeing still has unfilled orders for more than 2,200 next-generation 737s, worth more than $155 billion at current list prices. And finally, man's return to the moon will involve stays long enough to require attention to a problem discovered by Apollo astronauts in the 60s, dust. It's not just a housekeeping issue either. Scientists are studying lunar dust, and they want to know how it deposits in the lungs differently in the moon's reduced gravity. The National Space Biomedical Research Institute reports that controlling exposure to lunar dust could be an important health issue for astronauts and will influence the design of structures in which they live on the moon. During the Apollo lunar missions in the 60s and 70s, the clingy particles were easily transported via spacesuits into the lunar lander following moonwalks. The amount of dust inside the vehicle was so great that some astronauts reported they could smell it. Lunar dust has properties comparable to fresh fractured quartz, which is highly toxic. In addition to finding ways to limit exposure to the dust, special drugs are being considered to fight the effects. And obviously, if astronauts are tracking the stuff into their landing craft, it is also a housekeeping issue. Fortunately, in the last 40 years, NASA has developed an effective strategy to answer housekeeping issues with the introduction of women into the astronaut corps. Stop, I'm kidding. Pay no attention to what my wife says. That's the latest from Aero News. Address your cards and letters to. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Mike Bush, a veteran pilot and ANP mechanic, who's extending his famous owner maintenance seminars into a new company that will professionally manage the maintenance of your small general aviation aircraft. I'll ask him how, why, and what it costs. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.